Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review Presents with Donovan and Ken. And this is episode 433, recorded September 15th, 2024.
So we're all caught up on Star Trek again, just twiddling our thumbs, waiting for some new books. Mm-hmm. So at the time of recording, the new Aliens movie is out at the theater, so we thought it would be fun to do an Aliens comic book as part of the presents. And myself being a big Superman fan, why not do Aliens versus Superman? That came out in 1995.
And I happen to have seen a YouTube video recently that actually went over this book, or this series of three books, this little mini series. And it was good. I was thinking how ridiculous Superman can just use his heat failure vision and just take out like thousands of these things if he wanted to. But so what kind of contest is there? As most things with Superman involved. But they did a good job.
Yeah, this is a good one.
Of making it interesting.
Yeah, I like this this team up, Aliens versus Superman, better than the Aliens versus Batman stories that they did.
Okay.
Even though I like those too, but you know, when you're dealing with the xenomorph, it's a little more believable that Superman could walk away unscathed than you know Batman. You know, Batman's got the armor, but can it really take on a you know that xenomorph inner jaw thing slamming into his head?
Yeah, I know.
I don't think Batman would walk away from that
too easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I'll give you a spoiler in that one, when that happens, Batman just grabs the second mouth with his hands and stops it that way, you know, so it's a cool visual, but you're thinking about how fast you have to be in order to bring your hands up and catch a jaw before it smashes into your noggin.
Exactly.
I don't know. I'd rather see Superman do it.
And you do here.
Yeah, it is a scene that happens here in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this was an interesting story. I'm glad we're doing it, but I do feel a little weird straying so far from Star Trek books for so long.
Yeah, this is kind of this is pretty far afield from Star Trek, but it does involve a space shuttle and space stuff.
Yeah,
so we do have space stuff going on.
Yeah, a lot of Trek tropes end up in this three-parter.
I think you're right about that.
But I'm just saying, you know, with IDW slowing down their comic book production of Star Trek books, we're having these lulls more often than not, where we're just waiting for something to come out.
Right.
So anyways. But I like doing these little one-offs because it kind of fun to do something different.
It is. And especially if it's a pretty good story.
Right.
So. Now, mind you, it is a comic book. So there are some things that happen in it that are still a little bit, you know.
I don't know. We'll have to talk about it because I thought this was perfection.
I know you do. And visually, the artwork is very much product of the times. So this is like a mid-90s thing, and there's a lot of very stylish things going on in it, especially at the very beginning, which I have a few comments about, which I'll mention later.
Well, I look forward to hearing them. So this came out in three parts, so we'll do each issue individually. I think the easiest way to read this now is through the they've re-released it as a graphic novel several times, so there's it's individual. I think it's matched up with Superman versus Aliens 2. And then there's also books called Dark Horse DC Comics, where it has like all of the Aliens Predator crossovers with the DC Universe, which some of them are a lot better than others. Like the Green Lantern Aliens one, that makes a lot of sense. The Predator versus Justice League, little not as much sense. But no, those are a good read if you want to go out and read some of them. They're definitely worth a read.
Right.
Might be a collector's items now that Disney owns the Alien franchise. So maybe those don't get reprinted very much anymore. I don't know.
Mm. And of course, now we're getting treated to all the Marvel superheroes going up against Predator and Aliens?
Right, yeah. Right now, they just started Aliens versus Avengers and Black Panther versus Predator.
Right, okay. So I looked at a little bit of the Avengers one. I haven't seen the Black Panther,
Yeah, the Wolverine was good.
You know, I thought the Wolverine one, I thoroughly enjoyed it. There's a few things that happened in it that was a bit ridiculous, as we mentioned when we reviewed it. But I liked it quite a bit. It's just in the end, I keep forgetting, you really can't kill Wolverine. They really made that story like Predator was going to kill him. But right. It's like, in the end, no, you're can't. In the end, you're not going to kill him. So it's like, and he's pretty deadly. So in the end, he even killed Hulk, right? I mean, a couple times with the head off and the claws in the brain. And
right.
It's really hard to defeat Wolverine. Anyway.
Anyways, yeah, you're definitely not going to kill off your main star in a crossover book that may or may not be canon to the main series anyways.
Yeah.
Although I would like to see, I read a lot of the Predator versus whatever. It would be nice to see the Predator win at least one. Even in his movies, I was like, you know what? It'd be fun if they just came out with at least one movie where he wins. Because he's supposed to be this bad Predator, or the best hunter in the galaxy, yet he's never won once. He always dies.
And especially to normal human beings.
Right.
I mean, the superhero things are one thing, but to normal human beings?
Anyway. Sure, right. Anyways, shall we get into this one? Because they are kind of long.
Please, let's.
And we're going to do three issues today, so.
Yeah. Do it.
All right. You ready? All right. So this is issue one of Aliens versus Superman. Or is it Superman versus Aliens? Let's look. It's Superman.
It's Superman versus Aliens.
Yeah. This one came out July of 1995, co-published by DC Comics and Dark Horse Comics. I think the art staff and everything is the same through all, but I'll read this one. Dan Jurgens did the story and layout arts. Kevin Nolan did the finished art. Bill Oakley, letterer. Greg White is the color guides. Android Images is the color separations. Special thanks to John Nyberg. Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. And the original Aliens design is by H.R. Giger. All right, so story starts. In full 90s garb, Lois and Clark are heading via helicopter to a LexCorp lab. Clark, a.k.a. Superman, in case you don't know, hears a Kryptonian message coming from an oncoming space debris. So he gets the copter to land at a nearby island so that he can change and rescue the probe. He saves it, and he's able to communicate with it telepathically, and it gives him coordinates to a Kryptonian colony. So at this point, Superman is the last son of Krypton, so he's very happy to find out that he may indeed not be the last. Superman accepts some help from LexCorp, who gives him a ship so that he can get to the coordinates. So his deal with LexCorp is that they can get any t- technology from the colony that he finds. So he launches with the ship from a space station, and Lois will stay on board the space station to cover the story. So the ship travels via hyperspace. It's not an instant flight, so it gives them some time to think. And they kind of go through a montage of what was going on with Superman at this time in the comic book canon. So he talks about how he was not actually born on Krypton. He was born on Earth through the Matrix ship. He talks about killing Zod early in his career and vowing never to kill again. And it is odd that he never mentions Doomsday, which was very recent at the time where he died and came back, or his engagement to Lois. But he is sporting the mullet, so it is definitely post-Doomsday. So he eventually gets to a planetoid with a domed city. He notices immediately that his powers are starting to diminish due to lack of a yellow sun. He finds a crashed bus of sorts, and he finds some surviving people in the ship. So he flies them over to his shuttle and sends it back to Earth via autopilot so that they can receive some medical treatment. He does find some dead facehuggers and a ton of unopened xenomorph eggs. He eventually finds an adult alien who attacks him. He tries talking to it in English. So even if the alien was somewhat chatty, I kind of doubt that it would know an Earth language, but that doesn't stop him. They end up fighting. Superman's definitely trying not to kill it. And then after it rips up his costume and Superman takes a hit from the inner jaw to the noggin, he eventually punches it so hard that it bleeds acid into his eyes. Now blinded, he is saved by a young 16-year-old girl who speaks Kryptonian. She bandages his eyes and tells him that they're on a planet called Argo City and that her name is Kara. So longtime DC fans will know that Argo City is where Supergirl's from, and Supergirl's Kryptonian name is Kara. So as a Superman fan, super excited when I read this back in 1995. So, you know, you're thinking, is this bringing Supergirl back to the main continuity? So elsewhere, the ship that's heading to Earth, one of the injured men start to groan and starts having something happen to his chest area. To be continued.
Huh. Yes. Yeah, there are a lot of little nuances going on here with the city and space that they're at right now that were a little confusing to me. But we'll talk more about that later.
Right.
Because there's revelations that happen.
Yeah, so at this point, we believe that it's somehow a city that survived the destruction of Krypton.
Yes.
Which is how it was in the old comic books in the 50s and stuff. That was where there was a Kryptonian colony. I think in the Supergirl movie, the one with Helen Slater, they were able to get that city into like basically the Phantom Zone type alternate dimension. So it was able to be saved, but it's not in real space like the rest of the universe. But it's definitely Argo City. She's always from Argo City. So as a fan, in 1990s, when they have written Supergirl out of continuity, it was kind of cool that we may be getting a new Supergirl.
Yeah. Well, just if you look at her, the first thing I saw when I saw her face, especially when I saw her name, was like, that's Supergirl. So it's like, I didn't remember the thing about Argo City because I'm more of a casual Superman fan. Sure. But it was like, boy, it was like, this looks like Supergirl.
Yep.
Anyway.
Definitely. And she's running around like Ripley with giant flamethrowers and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, is it truly a flamethrower? Is there something more to it?
I don't know. It definitely looks like a flamethrower. It catches the alien on fire.
Well, yeah. And it's got the tanks of what looks like fuel, you know, combustible, whatever kind of fuel it was in the movie. But the Aliens movie or Alien movie, but it almost looks like a beam coming out of it in some of the panels. Anyway, I just wondered. So I think this was a great setup and a great cliffhanger. So on the same page, I think it was the same page, the last page, you not only hear the big reveal about her name being Kara, But then also you see in the spaceship or the shuttle or whatever you want to call it that Superman sends back that the chest burster comes out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's sending a chest burster straight to Lois.
Exactly. You thought you were saving people, but actually...
Yeah, so this book is, what, almost 30 years old? I read it when it first came out. I was waited on bated breath for this issue to come out every mm-hmm. month. And I've read it a few times since then, but it's been at least 20 years since I've read it. So mm-hmm. you watched that video from Alien Theory and were telling me things about it. And I had totally forgotten about the whole subplot of the aliens being on the space station with Lois.
Mm-hmm.
So, but reading it again and talking to you about it, I was just like, oh, I totally remember when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And then that last page, oh, it's coming to get Lois, you know, so it's a good story, I think. My only complaint really is, Superman really not wanting to hurt the alien. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I get his not wanting to kill sentient beings, but come on, the thing's really trying to kill you. I think that you could make an exception this time.
Yeah. Plus, we know the alien, the aliens. We know what's going to happen. You're going to be forced to, and it's kind of like the Star Trek a comic book where they're dealing with zombies on a colony.
Oh, right.
Company don't want to. Exactly. They don't want to use their phasers to kill them, which they could easily do. So they obviously have more power than most protagonists that come up against zombies. And obviously Superman has a lot more powers than most of the protagonists that come up against aliens. Right. So that was good that they had they had him, you know, he's a good guy. He had this thing recently in his past where he did kill Zod and the other two. And he doesn't want to do this again. So that's right. And plus they're depowering him because he's away from the yellow sun. So
right.
That's good.
Yeah, and then they blind him with the acid, so now he's depowered even more. So now he mm-hmm. can't see and he doesn't have his heat power or his eye powers. So
exactly. So that's pretty handy. That's good. I mean, they really had to depower him somehow. So
yeah, I really like this. This way is much better than how they did it in the Predator crossover with Superman, where in that one, Superman finds the Predator ship, and when he opens mm-hmm. it, like some gas comes out, and the gas depowers him somehow. So then, rest of that series, he's depowered because he breathed in the atmosphere from this alien ship, the Predator ship, which I always thought was a little bit of a BS move.
Yeah, that isn't good.
You're talking about a guy who can hold his breath for days, and you're telling me that he takes a whiff of something and it depowers him completely?
Yeah.
I just think you just wanted an excuse.
You needed it. It's like many crossovers to bring the two parties together. Frequently they make some compromise to make it work, which you just got to go with. And right. some are more egregious than others. And, right. And yeah, so this, what they did in this comic is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I gotta mention the, Miami Vice feel.
Oh yeah. You mentioned that. Go for it.
Okay, I just gotta do it. So at the beginning of the book, we see Clark and Lois, you know, going to LexCorp and meeting Doctor, whatever her name is and stuff. Anyway, oh my God. So Clark has a double-breasted suit, kind of like Tubbs wore in Miami Vice, and the Tubbs character. And he's got these white lensed sunglasses on, and he's got the mullet, as you mentioned. And he and Lois are like, they're in a fashion shoot. They're models. They're in a fashion shoot. even though they're talking to each other, they're almost always looking back at the reader, like models in a photo shoot coming out of Macy's or whatever. And it's just extremely stylized. And Clark, for me, was always supposed to be the bumbling geek. The bumbling geek who could never be thought of as Superman, always wore a conservative dress. And then, now you've seen a lot more of Superman than I have, but this is the first time I have seen Clark look cool. Okay? First time. And yeah. And the clothes are cool. He's got the black shirt. Not a conservative white shirt or anything like that. He is just a styling beast.
Yeah. Nah, he's looking good. Yeah, in the 90s, they got away from the bumbling Christopher Reeve type look.
Well, not only a Christmas, yeah. But, I mean, before the Christopher Reeve thing, I mean, wasn't he always pretty conservative looking?
He always just wore a suit.
In the books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a normal suit.
Yeah.
Anywho. And then I just also have to mention that the first time you see Dr. Cheryl Kimball, the ridiculously padded shoulders of her outfit, where her shoulders are so huge compared to her hips, compared to her head. It's like, oh my God, I remember those days.
Yeah.
Although I gotta say that the jacket is even bigger than I remember ever seeing back in the 90s.
This is Metropolis fashion. It's a little different than what we had.
Okay, that's fine. It's almost reminding me of Talking Heads.
Yep, I was just gonna say that. I couldn't remember his name.
Big suit. David Byrne.
David Byrne, yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Just to wear the big suit on stage. That was great. It was so iconic.
Yeah. Yeah, he kinda had a comeback here a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he pops up every once in a while.
I haven't seen him in that suit though.
No, I think he dumped the suit.
This is off subject, but there was that Nicolas Cage movie about him entering people's dreams and stuff, and they have a big scene with Nicolas Cage in that suit.
You're kidding me.
No, it's funny. It's pretty funny.
Oh, that's funny. So that's the one where he looks like a middle-aged, balding, white dude?
Yeah, like a history professor at a small community college. Yeah,
sorry,
because I think that's where he was.
Okay. But he ends up in a dream wearing the exact David Byrne suit.
Because
that's funny.
Yeah, because that's the whole premise of the show is that he starts entering everybody's dreams in the world.
Everybody starts dreaming, have dreams him. With him in it.
Yeah,
and then they recognize him later. It's like.
And he's that guy from the dream. Yeah, it's a crazy movie. But it just has that David Byrne scene, so I thought I'd bring it up.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so what'd you think of the artwork overall? I mean,
I'm glad you asked.
Aside.
I'm glad you asked. There are some scenes that are, or some panels that they've drawn so cool. There is one of the coolest things that I've ever seen of Superman, where after they're in the helicopter and the satellite is going down or whatever, and then Clark is away from everybody and he's opening up his clothing and he's got the glasses on and there's lots of shadows, and that is just about the coolest looking Clark Kent transformation into Superman that I've ever seen. Very cool looking. Yeah. And then the next time you see him full Superman, and he's lifting up off of the beach, whatever. And the look on his face, it looks like he's pinching a loaf and having a really hard time.
Yeah, he's grimacing.
And it's like, so bonus points on the transformation scene. Very cool looking. And then there's just something about the depiction of Superman's face in many panels of the book that I think just didn't strike me as being spot on.
Right. No, I'd agree with you.
Yeah.
It's funny because Dan Jurgens is like a staple in both DC and Marvel, done tons of Superman stuff. You know, he was one of the writers of The Death of Superman. He's a staple of Superman. He's a staple of Thor. He'd done tons of Thor stuff for Marvel. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm just not a fan of this. I don't know what he was doing in this particular book, but a lot of the times I just, it's not resonating with me, especially it's the Superman stuff. His just face just seems too, I don't know, angular or whatever. I don't know. He just looks odd a lot of times.
And he's got a lantern jaw on him that just does not quit. I mean, to some degree in the earlier things where we were talking about the double-breasted suit and stuff, he almost looks like he's a mob hitman.
Right.
Just something about the look and the small nose and the steely looking face and then the jawline, especially when he, oh my God, that was the worst. Okay. So when you see him, in the shuttle, the spaceship, whatever you want to call it, the LexCorp ship, and he's looking out and saying, "Wish me luck." And the look on his face, it's like, oh my God. I mean, his brow is so furrowed. I mean,
that was the one I was talking
about.
He looks like
he's getting ready to kill somebody.
Right. Which is funny because I've read tons of other Dan Jurgens stuff, you know, from this time. And I don't remember his art looking like this. So I even went back and looked. He did one issue of Star Trek. So I did go back and pull that one up. And, you know, he did the annual from 1986 of the original series. And, you know, his artwork there for the original series is very, very conservative. I mean, it looks just like the actors. It's not this stylized look with stringy hair and all that stuff like the Superman is.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Speaking of stringy hair. If I may make now here's a positive. So I was kind of negative there a little bit towards the artwork, but let me be positive. Sure. Although, you know, maybe halfway positive. As the LexCorp shuttle streaks off with the survivors in the ship, and Superman is flying back down from the heavens, whatever, it almost looks like a Batman thing. So you've got the shot of Supes basically all blacked out, his arms, the trunk of his body, his hair, his eyes. Well, his eyes are just like white or stuff. And then you could see the silhouette of like his stringy hair going up in the air, like a Doc Brown thing or almost or something. And then, of course, the Superman emblem on the chest is beautiful, bright, lovely. And then you've got the cape going off. And the cape, I mean, it looks like he's adapted a Batman panel to Superman.
Yeah, I always liked it when they did that with the complete black and then just that beautiful shield popping out. Yeah, no, it's good.
It's eye-catching. It's pretty cool. It's eye candy. But it's like it's very Batman-like because I don't think Superman ever had had a cape that big.
It's the 90s. They got big capes.
I guess so.
Everybody had a huge cape in the 90s.
Right. Looks very cool.
Yeah, no, it looks cool. And him fighting the alien. So around this time, Kenner, the toy store, the toy company, they actually came out with a line of alien action figures. And they came out with one alien action figure. It was the Scorpion alien. And it looks just like this version of the alien that he's fighting. I mean, even like the spikes and stuff that come off the shin and elbows and stuff like that, which aren't in the original movies, but it is in that Scorpion alien toy. They're here. So I'm assuming that Dan Jurgens must have gone to Walmart, bought that alien action figure and used that as his basis. And I'm not complaining at all. Cause I'm looking around my desk because I used to have that particular toy on my desk, and I would always kind of fiddle with it during calls and stuff because it just looks so cool.
Yeah, H.R. Giger. Pretty weird visualizations he used to come up with.
Right.
Disturbing, but cool. If I may, I think the depictions of Zod and his two henchmen in the book. So was that reprinted from previous books?
Yeah, or did he do that scene maybe? Happened from another issue, and that's how they looked in that issue, which I never liked. I never liked that like World War II hat and stuff. Just something's off.
Well, okay. So Zod struck me as a murderous officer friendly with that hat on, but it's supposed to be more military. I mean, he is officer general friendly, after all.
What is that?
Officer friendly? Okay. Here's another underscore how our ages are apparently very different. So when I was a kid growing up, officer friendly was a thing. So they would, the powers that be in America, in Chicago, would present policemen as not scary people, but people that are going to, you know, protect you and things. And then kind of a character or whatever was always officer friendly. So officer friendly, you know, would have some scene with a kid or something. And then just, well, Tommy, you don't want to go near fires or whatever. And it was officer friendly. So he struck me as officer friendly at first. But totally, totally different compared to what they did in a Superman 2 movie.
Right. Yeah. And this Zod and stuff is based, you know, this came out after the Superman 2 movie. So as a kid, I was always kind of put off that this doesn't look anything like the Zod from the movie.
Uh-huh. Right. But what came first? Well, the original depictions of Zod.
Right. I'm sure the old pre-crisis Zod probably looked like this, and that's why he looks like that.
Okay, there you go. And then the big guy henchman. He's got he doesn't look like the big actor who's been in a lot of other things, who has a beard and, you know, coiffed hair or something. This guy in the comic is drawn as like just a hairy beast.
Right.
You know, 5-day growth, hair's going everywhere, and he's got a headband, a sweatband on. So a very different look. And then the girl, you know, short hair, you know, villainous looking. And evil
because
looking.
She's a girl, she has to wear a skin tight suit.
There you go. So that's the closest one to the movie one.
Yeah, I never liked that depiction of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that did come from the comics. He killed him with that kryptonite, and then he got so upset that he put himself into exile and things like that. It was a whole storyline there for a while, where he left Earth.
Okay.
Which I'm surprised. I mean, like I said, you know, usually when you read these crossovers, they have nothing to do with the mainstream continuity. But here, because it's the same writer, Dan Jurgens, who's writing for the main continuity at the time. Mm-hmm. He brings in so much stuff from the real continuity. So, you know, at the end of the day, you're like, well, did this really happen in mainstream continuity or not? You know, especially with Kara. Is she going to come back as Supergirl when this is over?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we got to get to the end. We got a few more issues to go on that.
Right.
Can I mention about the spaceship? Because I do like to talk about hardware.
Please.
Okay. So they've got a pretty nicely, I think it's kind of cool looking, small spaceship. Maybe a little biggish. No, it's like a shuttle. Mm-hmm. It depends upon which panel you look at. It looks like it's either got seating for five or is seating for four. But, you know, whatever. Maybe five people max. So really, from a from a cargo carrying standpoint, and from a people carrying standpoint, it's got less capacity than a runabout.
Yeah, definitely.
But right, but it's got these big wings on it, which it looks cool. But so it's like, okay, so I guess it must be meant to also be able to operate in atmosphere. So that's why it's got wings.
Yeah, it doesn't have otherwise anti-grav. Okay, that aerodynamic stuff.
There you go. So I guess, yeah. But it looks cool. It looks almost, like somewhere between a bat and a Klingon bird of prey. And really what it looks like is, but I should say that this is something that came way after. Well, way after? Yeah, after, anyway. Stargate, the F-309 fighters from Stargate. So they're kind of a similar kind of winged thing. And of course the Gua'uld attack fighters also kind of had that, wing thing going downswept from the fuselage kind of look. So when I first saw it, I was thinking, oh, Stargate, but this book came out first.
Yeah, so can't be by much, right? Because then
not by that.
The movie came out in, 99, 98, somewhere around there?
The movie didn't have any spaceships.
Oh,
It didn't have any Earth spaceships. And gotcha. it didn't have Gua'uld fighters either. That came out in the TV series. Sometime later. And then we didn't have the F-309s until, season 3 or 4.
Okay.
It was pretty funny. One of my one of my favorite lines from Colonel O'Neill was, it was at the end of the second season when they were, or was it the first? No, I think it's the second season. Maybe it was the first one, where the Gua'uld are coming back to Earth because SG-1 has caused them all these problems and they're just pissed off and now they're going to take over Earth or whatever. So they send one of their ships at them at Earth. And then SG-1's able to get aboard the ship. And then they find some people on the ship that, that turn out to be compatriots. And then they both work together to stop the ship from getting to Earth and that kind of stuff. But then the guys who are on the ship are saying, you have great warships. And then O'Neill looks at him and goes, well, we got a few shuttles. And then, which I found that quite funny. But yeah, then later they were able to develop the F-302 and other or 309 and other ships. Mm. So later in the Stargate seasons, they finally had their own ships.
And they had armaments and stuff.
Well, it's mostly it's mostly missiles.
Gotcha.
They don't have lasers at first or anything like that. Anywho, it kind of looks a little bit like some of those Stargate ships. Anyway, yeah. It looks good. Yeah. Although I got to say quickly, how does LexCorp have this kind of technology? I mean, obviously it's a small ship and the small ship has faster than light travel abilities. Now I know it's a comic book.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest.
Meant to entertain. But
so back in 1995, when I was cracking this book open, and being a huge Superman and Aliens fan, I mean, I read everything Dark Horse put out for Aliens. So when I got to that part in this story, when Superman's going to take a hyperdrive ship to Argo, I remember what? Humans don't have hyperdrive. This is so unrealistic. And then I had to stop and I'm like, oh God, you're talking about a continuity where there's aliens are showing up on Earth all the time and Green Lanterns and all that stuff. So I was like, all right. Maybe in this, exactly. On this Earth, faster than light travel is possible. But I did have to stop myself because and when I was rereading it today, I was like, oh my God, I so remember having that argument in my head when I was a kid back 30 years ago. Because it fired. I was like, we don't have that here in the future of 1995. anyways, so it's funny that you bring it up because I had the same problem, but I was able to get past it.
I have one last thing to say about this issue. I thought Superman's supersuit was made out of like his Kryptonian blanket or something, because he goes, you know, he goes through all these different things, and you know, usually his suit is looks perfect. Doesn't matter what happens, it looks perfect. So I thought his supersuit was like super fabric that could go through all the things that Superman could go through. So that's why he never had a problem.
Yeah, that's. But that's pre-crisis. They had that. Post-crisis, they said that he had an aura that was just barely past his skin that would keep the costume from, you know, being shot with holes when he gets shot. But that was why his cape was always destroyed. His cape would get destroyed, but his suit wouldn't. So I'm assuming that since this is supposed to be that era, that maybe as part of his depowering, is that his because he's less powerful, then that's why his aura is not.
Oh, his aura is not. Oh, that's it. So Superman generates his own personal shield, is what you're telling me.
That is what they said during the post crisis. So when they kind of revamped the whole DC universe in the 80s, that was their explanation at the time.
Okay. Because his outfit gets ripped up pretty good in this issue, and it keeps on going in the next issues.
Right. In kind of a ridiculous way later, which always bothered me. Yeah. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Right.
But yeah, so in this one, the alien has ripped his pants and his emblem, maybe about 70% of his emblem is ripped off. You can still see the very top of it, but the rest is just bare, hairy chest.
Gouged bare, hairy chest. So he's got some gouges in his skin. So he is definitely low on his yellow sun fill-up. His reserves are getting low.
Right.
Cool.
All right. Shall we go on to the second one, or you got any more?
Let's do it. All right. I got nothing. Issue 2 of Superman versus Aliens. This one is August 1995. As Donovan said, I think these are the exact same people from a creative team, so I will not repeat them. There is one cover, and it presents Superman and Kara in trouble as five aliens are dropping down on them from above. And I guess the art's by the same folks, Dan Jurgens and Kevin Nolan, or Nowlin, probably. The LexCorp FTL shuttle containing four survivors approaches the LexCorp space station, but it's not slowing down to the dock. It's on a high-speed collision course. Dr. Kimball takes over the shuttle's remote controls from her panicking minions and safely brings the shuttle into the hangar. After a period of decontamination where no one went near the shuttle, they approach the ship and the medical team attempts to remove the survivors out of the ship and onto amazingly normal-looking low-tech gurneys. Three are alive, but the fourth is dead. His chest looks like it's been blown out. After the medical team is gone with the bodies, Lois is left alone to check out the shuttle, where she finds blood and some slimy substance she is totally unfamiliar with. A black figure hides in the shadows, watching. Meanwhile, back at the Survivor City, Kara takes the blinded Superman to a place of safety, where she tends to his wounds and uses really strong murine to help Supes recover his eyesight. Kara tells Superman her people's backstory, including how, if things were not bad enough, with lack of resources and starvation, the space freighter that arrived at the city ended up containing those black alien killing machines. Very few people are left alive in the city. After Supes can see again and the storytelling is over, they move outside, and Superman states his power levels are only at 20% at best, but he can still fly. They walk and talk about how the aliens reproduce. Superman realizes the survivors he sent back in the shuttle could be carrying alien seed to Earth. Meanwhile, on the LexCorp space station, a chestburster comes out in front of Dr. Kimball. Immediately, she sees the potential profit in this killing machine, which overrides the threat it presents in her mind. Back in the Wandering City, Supes is energized over trying to find out a way, any way, to get back to the space station and Earth. He must save Lois. They hear a huge racket from the direction of, quote, the box, which is the last refuge of the survivors, according to Kara. The aliens have found it and are attacking. They need to rescue the survivors. So to speed their travel up to the box, Supes flies and carries Kara. Meanwhile, back at Earth space station, the alien attacks a tech in the shuttle hangar and Lois sees it. Supes and Kara arrives at the final battle at the box, which is actually looks more circular. The fight is brutal, but Supes refuses to kill the aliens. Kara is just fine with killing them and swings away, Meryl. Meanwhile, back at the space station, Lois uses all her wits to survive the alien attack. Dr. Kimball does whatever she can to save the alien, no matter how that could lead to Lois's death. In the end, that alien is ejected into space. Meanwhile, at Survivor City, all heck is breaking loose at the box, and the survivors are being decimated almost as badly as Superman's costume. Finally, after they and one survivor are the only ones left alive, Supes grabs one in each arm and leaps a la Hulk out of the situation. When they can finally stop, the survivor is dead and Kara is likely the last survivor. Kara sleeps while Supes stands watch. The aliens breach the dome and Superman and Kara become separated. Supes wakes up alone and glued upside down in an egg chamber. A face hugger springs from a nearby egg and latches onto Superman's face. To be concluded in issue number 3.
They know how to end these issues.
Oh, they do. They do. I mean, come on. That's awesome. I like how this ended.
Right. Yeah, so Superman with an alien.
Face hugger. On his face.
Yeah.
And you know what happens.
That's where the babies come from.
Mm-hmm. And then the queen who's looking on is just got that. I mean, they got that shot of like the alien queen just looking on and smiling.
Yeah.
A new little bambino. A new little bambino.
So what'd you think of this issue? I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's moving the story along. Superman knows he's got to get back, doesn't know how he's going to do it. And then an important thing is they're basically they have the last stand of the people that are in the city. And now they're pretty much saying Kara's it. The only one left. So yeah. That's kind of important, considering what's going to happen soon in the next issue.
Yeah, so she, like Superman, is the last of her people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I hated that, you know, I get the whole no-kill thing, but come on. In order to save these few last people, you would probably do whatever you could instead of doing this whole, I'm just going to pull on their tails and things like that instead of...
Well, he let those people die.
Right.
I mean, how many people were inside that building? I mean, you don't know for sure, but I mean, they had a few panels that showed civilians, not all fighters. So he basically, through his inaction, signed their death warrant.
Right. Yep.
So that's not good.
Yeah. I mean, again, if they were sentient and he could stop it, that's one thing, but these are bugs. You know,
no.
it's okay to squish them if they're hurting you. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, we really don't know how intelligent they are. I mean, they got some intelligence.
Sure. So yeah, they cut the power and stuff in the movie.
Exactly. So I don't remember ever getting a little glimpse into what their actual thoughts may or may not be. But we don't know for sure that they're not, you know, sentient.
Sure. That's true. But I mean, he does kill some, right? Doesn't he throw the grenades and while they're about to go off?
So he finally gets with it.
What did he think they were going to do? I mean,
well, he finally got with it and used, I think when he grabbed that bandolier of grenades, I think that's finally when he got with the program and started killing.
Right.
But too late.
Yeah, too late. That poor guy.
The last guy
who just lives long enough to land on the roof.
Well, you'd imagine that if you're hulking around, you know, jumping around and stuff, there'd be a lot of stress on those people you're carrying around.
Yeah, it'd be pretty jarring.
Especially when you land. I mean, that would be, oof.
Yeah, I could get Superman's knees being able to take it, but the rest would be pretty jarring.
Oh, right. So basically, so his arms are, you know, arms of steel, and then you land, and then you basically fold over both people's bodies like a sandwich or like a taco.
Or they just go right through you, or you just cut them in half.
Right.
Like a cheese slicer.
Well, wasn't there a Big Bang Theory where they were having a geek argument? And they were talking about how Superman was able to save Lois from falling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yep. And, you know, one of them was saying, oh, she had so much momentum going, she would have been sliced in half by his arms. That, you know, it's like, yeah, that's right. Anyway.
Yeah. We don't think about that. Hulk can do it. Superman can do it.
Exactly.
It is kind of funny because, I mean, in the original Superman, we're talking about in the 30s Superman, he couldn't fly. His whole thing was he could leap tall buildings. So, it was all jumping until the Max Fletcher cartoon came out and they drew him flying. And then they were like, I like this. He's going to fly from now on.
Uh-huh.
Change direction mid leap. That's pretty nice.
Okay. Well. So they kind of went back to old school a bit in this issue.
Yeah, exactly. Especially some of these shots of him like jumping in the silhouette, you know, the little silhouette of him holding him while he's jumping. It looks like those old comics.
Cool.
So, all right. So here's my biggest complaint about the whole three books series. Okay. And it bothered me in 1995 and it bothers me now. I hate the look of Superman with his suit torn, bare chested. Okay, that's fine. So he lost the whole upper part of his costume. Great. Undies, you know, his shorts still there. That's nice because I don't really want to see him running around naked.
Exactly.
But one leg has the suit and the other leg is just bare leg. That looks so ridiculous because he still has the boots on. Both feet have the boots, but only one leg has the suit and the other one is just bare legged. It's like the colorist like colored it in wrong. Like, oh, did he forget the color of the leg?
Mm-hmm.
And they just keep showing it, and it's just like, oh, it looks so silly to me. It just looks so silly, him just one-legged, one suit-legged.
I don't know whether it was this issue or the next one, but I was just getting Tarzan vibes.
I could see
that. He looks like Tarzan. He's got the long hair, long Tarzan hair, and he's got the bare-chested thing, and he almost has the loincloth. That's it. Almost.
Almost. Yep. Nope. You're absolutely right. Yeah. So. It's just funny. It's just a funny look that it would like go straight up to where the shorts are. And then that's where the rip ends. So that, thank goodness we don't see butt cheeks, but bare legs.
Yes. Yes. It is a look that I have never seen before, ever, 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 of Superman.
And it's like, maybe if the boot was gone, it wouldn't be so bad. You know, if he had like one boot, like he lost everything on that leg, right? It's just bare skin. That'd be one thing. It's just the red boot, bare skin, trunks. It's just like, that's a weird look.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right, that's my soapbox for this issue.
Okay. I think the continuing fashion show, where they have a panel where Lois and Dr. Kimball are standing together in their little skin-tight jumpsuits, and they both, you know, Lois has her arms folded and Dr. Kimball has her arm down, and they're both like posing there
right
for the reader. I think that's quite funny looking. I mean, they look like they're about to have a dance off or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see it. Well, what about all the poses they have Kara in? You know, they have three pages of mainly just Kara in the middle. And then in the background, we see little panels of her story, right? While she's just talking for three pages. But right. In one of them, she's like hand behind her neck and like the seductive pose kind of thing. And I'm just like, that's kind of weird. I mean, are they trying to make her look sexy while she's talking about all her whole world being destroyed by these creatures?
Yeah. I mean, she's supposed to be 16 years old.
Or is she just scratching the back of her head and I'm reading too much into it and I'm the one that's wrong. That might be it too. I'm not saying.
I don't know. I think that's pretty sexy looking.
Yeah.
That's the full page.
It's just one, a weird
right?
pose. Yeah. Yeah. The third of the third page of her little recap story.
Right.
Anyway.
Which by the way, all that's a little confusing to me.
What's
so
that?
So she's not from Krypton at all in any way. Totally different planet she's from, right? I think because she's not a Kryptonian, and then she says that, and so
I don't think we know that until next issue. But yes.
Oh, spoiler. Okay. Well, I thought this was the. Okay, so I guess she didn't say it yet. Okay, whatever.
Maybe she
so. The whole
I don't remember.
Okay,
no,
so the whole.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
So the whole idea that you've got a city, okay, and you know your world's doomed or something, and you're able to somehow construct a airtight top for it, a dome, and then set off explosions outside of town all around it, and then excise this chunk of the planet that the city sits on top of, and then you got the dome on top of, and then you're able to get away from the doomed planet, I guess by the explosions, because you don't have any motors on this thing.
Right.
There's no rocket engines or anything. I'm sure the whole idea is very old school. I mean, they probably did something like this back in the 50s or whatever.
Yeah, 100%.
So... I think the whole concept is ridiculous, but kind of cool.
Yeah.
But so are they saying that Kara on her world, because she's not supposed to be Kryptonian, we find out, I guess, in the next one. Sorry for the spoiler. But is she saying that that's what her planet did?
Right.
When they were faced with the same situation as Krypton?
Yeah, so basically her planet had the same problem, and they domed up Argo and was able to get it away from the rest of the planet.
So two planets had planet ending catastrophes of something caused it. I don't know what it is. And they both use the same solution. Okay.
Well, no, I mean, in this continuity, Krypton didn't do that, right?
Oh,
Krypton exploded
and
sent Superman. So, yeah, in the previous pre-crisis continuity, that's where Argo City came from. But in this rebooted DC universe, there was no Argo City. So this was the first introduction.
There was no Kryptonian. There was no Kryptonian Argo City.
Exactly, right.
This is a totally different planet.
Yeah, so after reading this issue, you still think that it's that pre-crisis Argo City. It's not until next issue that you realize it's not from Krypton.
Okay. It's just a little confusing to me.
No, I agree. But yeah, it's that retro futurism thing that was going on in the 50s and 60s on how they explained all this techno babble.
Ah, cool. Okay. I guess I just want to comment on the space station and then I'm done. So the space station just reminds me a little bit of a, Star Trek movie space station, like around Earth.
Right.
So the look of it's not exactly a facsimile copy, but it's similar. And it also, so on the hangar bay, there's the fight with Lois and stuff. And so they've got force fields of some kind that is the door to the shuttle hangar bay. And so it's like, again, it's like, cool, but again, how has Earth got this technology? And you could have just made that a normal door rather than a force field kind of thing. But it's like, okay, fine, whatever. It's just the FTL drive, small ship, and then the force field hangar doors. I don't know. It just.
Right. Yeah. And it didn't really, it looked cool, but it didn't really make sense where that, how that door, the force field, stopped the shuttle from flying through, mm-hmm. or at least half of the shuttle. And then the other half that happened to have the alien went ahead and made it out to space.
Right.
That was a little confusing. I mean, how is it?
A little bit.
At sometimes it's a, what is it? You can go, sometimes you can go through the force field, and then other times the force field's solid. I don't know. It was unclear.
Well, it seemed to me that they had two neon bulbs, fluorescent bulbs, like you can get at Home Depot, and that goes vertically, top to bottom. And that's the edge of the two doors.
Okay, so it does actually shut. The light, well, the light so. Shuts. Okay. That's the way it looks. So
the edge of each half of the, quote, force field door that slides back, open and closed, seems to close at the point of these two fluorescent bulbs coming together.
Right.
I think.
I guess.
Yeah. Also, the number of seats keeps on changing on that LexCorp shuttle. So,
in the first issue,
well, they had
four last time.
The first issue had four in the back and one in the front.
Oh, now it's three in the back.
Now they've got, and then in the middle, when Super Soups was putting people in there, it might have had three and one, and then now it's got three and one. But early on. Yeah, there were four seats in the back. Now, I know I'm being picky, but
maybe they took out one of the seats that had all the blood on it. They're like, nobody wants to sit in that one again.
Maybe. And then they automatically balanced each other out in the back. they're evenly spaced.
Exactly.
Anyhow, that's all I got to say.
All right. One thing that kind of I don't know if bothered is the right word, but in the first issue when they spoke Kryptonian to each other, it had the little brackets around it so that you knew that they weren't speaking English. Right. But in this issue, they've completely dropped that. It's just all no brackets. So if you were just picking up this issue, you might not catch that they're speaking Kryptonian.
Right.
It's a nitpick, but yeah, I just thought it was weird that they would change it from one issue to the next.
Yeah. Well, was it Star Trek VI that they were speaking Klingon for a while, and then all of a sudden the Chancellor's speaking English?
Yeah.
For that the one? Benefit. I think that's the one.
Yep, that was it.
So that was nice of them to speak Klingon for a while.
Well, they did it in Star Trek Discovery, too, right? There for a while, they were all speaking English with those subtitles, and then...
Yeah, with a lot of spitting. A lot of spitting involved in that.
Yeah, it's a very harsh language. Yeah. I love the artwork on the space station. I agree with you that it looks like the Star Trek IV space station.
Mm-hmm.
But man, when she's fighting the alien and stuff, that artwork is really nice. Like when it's trying to get into the shuttle and she's flying out.
Yeah,
I liked it. I like, if he did design it after that toy, it looks fantastic. It's a great look. It's not quite the H.R. Geiger version from Alien 1, but it's cool. I like those little spikes everywhere.
Right.
Let's see. What else do I have for this one? The chestburster looked cool coming out. Poor guy. Mm-hmm. And that might be it for this issue.
I have one last thing to say.
All right.
Just one little thing. When Supes is able to get one heat vision blast out, his last one, it just reminded me, like, oh, damn. That's really a shame he doesn't have his heat vision. And then the next thing I was thinking of was Homelander, who uses his heat vision all the freaking time and even has a, in one episode of The Boys, has a, like, a fantasy thing in his head. Although at first you don't know that, where there's like a whole crowd of people and he gets pissed off about something and he just starts lasering like 60 people, just bzzz, just like taking them out.
Yeah.
And then you find out it's just him in his head fantasizing about something he'd like to do.
But he could do it.
And could do it and probably will eventually. And it's like, man, if Supes had his power, he could really decimate those aliens, those alien hordes.
Right. But just like in Star Trek, you forget that you have the wide beam setting when it's convenient.
Yeah.
Clutch.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, but Homelander, I don't think he has a wide beam setting. He just uses it like a lance and just strafes and just takes people out.
Right. Yeah. Superman could do that too, but he chooses not to because he's a good guy.
He is a good guy. Almost a little bit too good a guy in this series at first, but still.
All right. Okay, ready to move on to three? The finale?
Let's do it.
All right. I did not mention the cover of the first issue, which is probably my favorite out of all the covers. It shows, this is for issue number one. It was a picture of Superman flying up. So he's like, maybe a third or less, a quarter of the big page. And then behind him, huge silhouette of the alien. I guess not really a silhouette, but it's the alien in profile.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice.
Yeah, I agree. I like it.
Yeah. All right. So then this issue, issue three, the foreground shows an alien queen kind of in profile again. And then behind her, we can see Superman flying at her towards Aura. He's kind of flying within that little barrier in Alien 1 where there was like a little laser barrier between the atmosphere and the eggs. So he's kind of like flying through that over some eggs straight towards her. All right. So this issue, so it has a cover date of September of 1995, again, published by DC Comics and Dark Horse. So Lois is racing through the space station just as the last two chestbursters are erupting from the possible Kryptonians, because at this time we still think they're Kryptonians. She uses a makeshift hairspray flamethrower to kill them, since LexCorp only wants to use them for studying. Meanwhile, back on Argo City, Superman wakes up cocooned and impregnated with a xenomorph embryo. Kara beams in, using a teleporter of some sort, with a flamethrower, and she's able to save him. They race to safety, and we learn that she, too, is infected with an embryo. Superman tells her that they can just get back to Earth, then she, too, will gain powers like he does and possibly survive the birthing. He tells her that all Kryptonians should have that same power. She just needs to get to the yellow sun. And then this is where we learn that she's not Kryptonian. She says that Argo adopted the Kryptonian lifestyle and language after they learned of its destruction from a traveling monk. They eventually suit up in some exosuits and they travel to the crashed alien craft that brought the aliens to them all those, I guess, years ago. They're able to get to the ship only to find even more aliens. On the space station, Lois fights with the LexCorp Dr. Kimball. And then the last surviving alien shows up and interrupts the fight. Lois is able to shoot it, but it's able to escape. The alien does find some other scientists And while he's killing them, they destroy the station's gyro, which then causes the station to start plummeting towards Earth. Back on Argo, Superman and Kara find an escape pod. He programs it to go back to Earth, but he needs to flip the ship over. And so in order to do that, they're going to explode part of the ship, have it flip over, and then launch the escape pod. Kara goes to the other side of the ship to start this explosion to flip the ship around or clear the launch tube. And once she's ready, he starts to beam her back to the escape pod using the teleporter. But he's taking a lot of time because he's actually attempting to beam the alien out of her before he beams her to the escape pod. Eventually, an alien shows up and she has to actually jump off the transporter pad in order to avoid being killed by it. And so she's not able to make it back to the escape pod as the ship explodes and the life pod is rocketed back to Earth. And so we see all of Argo City in the background exploding real good. Superman, who they say has an alien queen in him, starts to try to come out of his chest as he's heading home. But he's able to jump out of the escape pod as they enter Earth's orbit. And the yellow sun is able to give him enough power for fast enough that he's able to ingest the embryo and spit out its acid remains. So he's now back up to full strength and he heads back towards the space station. He saves it from falling into the Earth's atmosphere. He saves Lois from a fatal bite from the very last alien. He again refuses to kill it, but Dr. Kimball fries it. All is saved, yet Superman laments about how he was not able to save Kara. And then elsewhere, we see a very much alive Kara in another escape pod drifting into parts unknown. Maybe someday she will make it to Earth and become the proper Supergirl that we want and need. The end.
Yay! Lots of killing, but everything's okay now, more or less.
Cool. Yeah, I hated that he had to leave her, but I did like the whole beaming the alien out of her. I thought that was a cool way to
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. And then, you know, quite frankly, when I was reading the last page where she was in the pod. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if that was reality or what he wished happened.
Maybe.
But, I mean, I think you're probably, I think in the end, if I had to pick one or the other, I agree with what you're saying. She did get out of it somehow, and she's in the pod. And that would be more interesting if they ever want to bring her in. Keeps things open-ended. But right. I wasn't 100% sure if that was real or just what he wishes happened.
And if it was real, it's also a little sad because she doesn't know where Earth is and she doesn't know where anything is. So she's just going to starve to death in this pod floating around space.
Exactly. She doesn't know where any habitable worlds are around there. Odds are, but who knows? Probably not. I mean, she was born on that chunk of rock, but
right.
I mean, they couldn't really navigate or anything. So did they really learn when she was a kid? I mean, they've been in that thing for a long time, right?
She was born on Argo City. So, it exploded from the mother planet before she was born.
A long time ago. Yeah. There you go. Okay. So did she necessarily learn about how to navigate in space?
Yeah, probably not, because this escape pod is from that alien's spacecraft. It's not even Argo Tech.
It's not even Argo Tech. Exactly. Right. Which, by the way, how does Superman know to program this pod to go to Earth?
I don't know. Maybe he looked at the coordinates when he was sending the Earth one back.
Yeah. Navigation in space is not easy. And sure. I know this is a comic book, but... So... The ship that went out to Argo City was pre-programmed, right? I mean, he didn't pilot it. He just sat in there. He was a passenger.
Right.
So I don't know that he would have necessarily been privy to the navigational computers, ins and outs, to know exactly where they went to.
I agree.
Especially if they went through some kind of FTL transition, which they seem to be insinuating, including with this tiny little escape pod. Again, now I know this is not Earth technology. It's some other species technology. So who knows what kind of wonderful things it has. But it's a pod. It's a little pod. And this thing can do FTL too. It's like, oh, yeah, fine. Anyway, whatever. So how that thing had FTL abilities, who knows? And then how does Superman really know how to program an alien spaceship he's never seen before?
Right, in another language, right.
Exactly, to go back to Earth. And how did he even know how to navigate in the first place to get back to Earth? I don't know.
Yep, all good questions.
Don't worry about it.
All good questions.
Don't worry about it. Just let it happen. Yeah, but and something like that's going to happen. If she does come back at some point, then... And I'm sure that I'm surprised you don't know, quite frankly, since you really are into the Superman comics. But exactly how they would have to do some kind of wave of the hand similar to explain how she found her way to Earth.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure she never shows back up.
Okay.
I mean, there is a Superman. There's a Superman Aliens 2, but it's set on Apocalypse, so I don't think she's in that one. Okay. And eventually they do get a Kara Zor-El from Krypton in the post-crisis continuity, and it's not her. So
it's not
I'm
her.
Pretty sure this is her only appearance.
Okay. Which is, now it makes it very sad.
Yeah, no, it's super sad.
Yeah. I thought it was very handy how Lois was able to use an aerosol can that would cause that large of an explosion that would kill two facehuggers.
Yeah,
facehuggers or chestbursters.
Yeah,
so it was able to kill two chestbursters without hurting her.
And why would they have hairspray or whatever this is? I'm assuming it's hairspray.
I'm sure it's not hairspray. It can't be hairspray.
How did she know it's going to be flammable?
Good question. I mean, you could put a lot of different kinds of things in a device like that isn't necessarily flammable,
right? But anyways, yes, it looks like she just grabbed some hairspray and a match and fried them.
I will say how badass she is. I do like that about it, no matter how unlikely it is.
Yeah, I always like this version of Lois.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not just sitting there misspelling words. She's out there in the thick of it.
Exactly. It's really good. Okay. Can I mention the Superman in space? That first panel when they got Superman in the space outfit, in the pressure suit.
Yeah.
So they in the book they find this equipment and he and Kara put this on, and then they've got, of course, another fashion shot where they're both posing for the reader. And of course, the wind is blowing just perfectly to have a few of Soup's locks of hair, up in the air and flowing.
Yep,
it's funny. And he looks bad. He looks good in the suit and that kind of thing. And he's got his Superman thing around his arm, so that's great. But look at Kara. It's like, how old was she supposed to be? Hamina, hamina. They've drawn her to be a full.
Yeah, she's a supermodel there.
Daryl Hannah, curvaceous, humana humana, filling that suit out just great.
Yeah, but then when you remember she's that she's curvaceous. 16, you're able to divorce yourself from those thoughts.
That is not the drawing of a 16-year-old. I'm sorry.
But yeah, it's ridiculous, a little fashion show.
Yeah.
And yeah. I really call BS on her giving him back the chest emblem. It's a lot smaller than it ever was on his chest, and two, it's the whole emblem. So we saw earlier in the issues that half of it you could still see, like the top part was there and the rest of it was missing. Yet here the full shield is somehow on a bicep size.
Captain Continuity strikes.
So it looks cool though, him flying around with a spacesuit with the emblem on his arm, but
yeah,
they could have just left that out. We know it's Superman.
I agree.
Because one's a girl and the other one's a giant hulking man. I think I can figure out which one was which. I don't need the armband.
Agreed.
So they're shooting a lot of aliens there on the space station without any worry of alien blood.
Blood, yep.
I mean, they talk about it having acid blood, but it doesn't stop them from still shooting it.
No.
And it leaks everywhere.
Yeah, very skinny arm looking Lois has this pistol, and she's like she shoots it right three times, I think, right in the mouth of one of the aliens.
Yeah, blam, blam, blam.
So you know there's going to be a lot of blood, acid blood disrupting from that little.
Yeah, and that was right after Dr. Kimball got acid blood on her arm. So they already knew that it was a thing.
Yeah.
But they're still doing it.
Yeah.
So anyways, last thing, and I'm sure we'll have things to talk about. The birthing scene, the chest burster scene out of Superman. Thoughts?
Okay, so he's in the 2001 Space Odyssey pod, and they come out. He comes out of hyperdrive, hyperspace, whatever, and then he's in orbit around Earth. And what he's out of the pod now, and the chest burster is trying to come through, but now he's got the yellow sun recharging his batteries. And he's able to hold it in to the point that it kills itself.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we can't see his chest, but we can see his suit. And in the suit, it's bulging out. So, I mean, that thing is, it's probably already poked through the skin, you would think. At least it's gone through his rib cage.
Yeah.
If it hasn't come out the skin too. I get what they're doing. And they have to show that, you know, oh, it's coming out. But maybe you drew it coming out too much to try to buy in that Superman's able to pull it back into his body and then digest it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And regurgitate the creature. That's what it
says. Yeah, he regurgitates it.
So,
and that little stuff comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it is Superman. So if anybody's going to withstand a chest burster, it's going to be Superman. But
withstanding it is one thing, but then for it to somehow make its way either to his lungs or to his stomach so he can spit it out, I have questions.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point. Yeah, it's in his body. It's not in his lungs. It's not in his throat. Well, the egg. Oh,
yeah, I guess the egg goes
through. So the face hugger.
Would have been in his stomach at one point,
It would have been in his stomach. So it must have come out of his stomach. Or was it in his stomach the whole time, and even it's the super stomach that kept him?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. But then at least that would make the regurgitation a little bit more believable.
True.
A little.
But it even shows, like, it's supposed to be inside of his body, and you see, like, the creature being like pulled back in by muscle or whatever. It's just kind of silly. I almost wish they would have had it coming out and then him getting his powers back and not dying from it or whatever.
Yeah. Well, all I have to say is it's gross and weird.
It is.
I mean, you're actually seeing the chest bursters face and eye and teeth, right?
Yep. Right.
Trying to push past his inner body.
Yep. And then he loses and goes back in.
Yeah. And then apparently all the bones get crushed under the Superman muscle because what he spits out looks like green goo.
Right. Acid goo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of, this came out much later, but they did a run of Hulk called The Immortal Hulk, which I really liked. But in it, at one point, they kill the Hulk, and he's in, like, dozens of jars, right? They got little pieces of him. His head's in a jar, his arm's in a jar. You know, he's all separated and dead. And then he's able to, like, reform. And when he reforms, over a person, right? And so basically absorbs that person as he's coming back together.
And then he
digests him or something that way.
So
when I was reading this today or this week, I was thinking of that Immortal Hulk kind of doing the same thing, but to a living, breathing dude. That was, I mean, he was torturing the Hulk bits, so he kind of deserved it, but it was a much more visceral scene with that guy getting absorbed than this chestburster.
Right. So was everybody getting a healing factor or something? I mean, how was Hulk able to pull himself together like that?
They've now said the Hulk's immortal. He'll never die.
Okay.
So all gamma created creatures are immortal. So She-Hulk and the Leader and all of them, Abomination, they're all immortal.
Oh, great. That's great.
So right up there with Wolverine and Deadpool, they'll be around forever.
Well, okay. Deadpool, I don't know about, but they had Old Man Logan, right?
Yeah.
In the comics.
Right.
And he looked pretty old.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still...
And Hulk was in that one, and he was old, so...
Right.
I guess they still age. They just don't die. I don't know.
Oh my God. So they all just turn into the face of Bo, which I know we've said that before, but still. Okay.
Anyways.
I enjoyed the story.
Yeah, it was good. I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, me too.
Again, more little nods to mainstream DC continuity here with them talking about Gladiator Superman. They have a little flashback.
I don't know what that is.
Well, there's a shot where him and the monk are together.
Oh,
and,
right.
And
okay.
You see Superman and like...
Yeah, he had that weird outfit on.
Yeah, he becomes a gladiator. A galactic gladiator.
Galactic gladiator. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Kind of like Hulk and Thor.
Yeah, it's exactly like that, but, you know, 20 years earlier.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly it, Ken. It's almost like
they like
just
it's the
copy
same
each other.
Yeah, boy. He looks like Henry Cavill could really do that look well. Justice. In that outfit.
Yeah, it could make its way. But it's very 90s, all with the pouches and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the armbands.
Right.
The 90s. When we thought that was really cool. We thought that was so cool. Anyways,
I just thought it was weird.
And then that Kara gives him a Polaroid of her. So you're talking about a city that's been ravaged by aliens for who knows how long, and has just been a floating city in the blackness of space, yet somehow they have Polaroids. And
yeah.
She has one of herself and gives it to him.
Well, okay. You don't know it's Polaroid, but the idea of photos on paper, period, seems a bit ancient.
Yeah.
And look at her outfit. She looks like she's got a sweater and she's,
yeah,
you know, from Middale High or something.
Yeah, here she actually looks 16 in that picture.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know how many years that Argo counts as a year, right? So, I mean, how many days is a year on Argo versus a year on Earth?
Sure. And how many years in Earth years does it take for an Argonian to grow?
Exactly.
Who knows?
Who knows? It's almost like it's ambiguous and not real.
And ambiguous and all made up. Yeah. What's that about?
So, anyways, when we started doing the Star Trek Comic Book Presents, this was always one of the ones I was like, man, one day I hope we get to do the aliens and Superman.
Very good.
So, I'm glad we did it. I'm glad you liked it.
I did. It's quite a change of pace. Now, we have been doing the Predator and Wolverine recently, so not that much different. Superman. I mean, who would have thought we'd do Superman? Well, obviously you, but I never envisioned doing a Superman
in my
story.
In my dreams. Yeah,
the closest
we did was the Green Lantern Star Trek crossover. I think they make there's like a Superman reference at some point in there.
Oh.
Which gave me the happies.
Makes me happy. Cool. Okay. Well, it sounds like we're heading to the end of this episode, Donovan. What are we doing next?
Well, we're still caught up on Star Trek comic books at the time of recording. And like I said at the opening, I love doing the present stuff, but we've done Wolverine, we've done Superman, Rick and Morty, Dungeons and Dragons, Aliens, Predator. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing more not Star Trek than we're doing Star Trek. So that we can stay in the vein of Star Trek, but we don't have any comic books to read, we're thinking of doing short stories.
Yes. And well, I wasn't even aware of these.
Yeah. So these are particularly short stories that have been released within magazines. So I guess magazines come out monthly, comic books come out monthly. It's kind of in the same vein. So, there's a current series called Star Trek Explorer, which is a magazine that comes out like quarterly or something. And then the old Star Trek magazine, which is now Star Trek Explorer. There was even some short stories released in there. You can go back to Amazing Fantasy and Amazing Stories. They all have short stories from time to time with Star Trek stuff. So we thought maybe it would be kind of interesting to do some of those. They're not quite novels, not quite comic books, but somewhere in between. What do you think?
Oh, that's what we're doing.
Oh, okay.
So episode 434, we'll be doing a Garrick story, which is very cool. And that comes from issue 7.
Of Star Trek Explorer.
Exactly. And then we're going to go all the way back to the first issue. I guess after it morphed from Star Trek Magazine into Star Trek Explorer. And we're going to do one with Q and Captain Kirk, which is like, oh.
Q and Captain Kirk.
Yes, which surprises me at first when I hear about that. And then it angers me a little bit. And then I'm back to, it'll be good.
I've read it. I think you'll be good.
Good. Excellent. Yeah, the Garrick one seems like a very interesting one. It seems like it's maybe going back into his backstory, you know, before DS9 and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, cool.
When he was an operative of the Obsidian Order. But I'm not 100% sure because I only read bits of it.
And then once we do get back into Star Trek, really just in talking about comic books, we have the ongoings going on, the Star Trek and Defiant issues. There is a one-shot Discovery coming out pretty soon. That's a choose-your-own-adventure, which will be interesting to do a synopsis for.
Lower Decks?
Yeah, Lower Decks. Okay. Did I not say that part?
I thought you said Discovery. I could be wrong.
I meant Lower Decks, sorry. Yeah, a Star Trek Lower Decks Choose Your Own Adventure. Mm-hmm. And then a special called Star Trek 500, celebrating the 500 issues that IDW has now put out of Star Trek.
Very cool.
And then we're getting a new ongoing next month or in a couple months of Lower Decks, your favorite. A Lower Decks ongoing.
Of all the things they picked. Okay, fine.
And that leaves...
And what did I say would have been a better choice than Lower Decks?
Prodigy?
No.
Enterprise?
Yes.
Those are the two odd men out. Those are the two franchises that have never had a comic book.
Yeah, but come on. I'm sorry. But I think I'd be a lot more interested in seeing Archer and Company's ongoing adventures than...
Yeah, 100%.
Than Mariner and the gang.
Yeah, fill in the gap between, from that last episode of Enterprise to the founding of the Federation.
Exactly.
That was a big chunk of time that you just skipped over, thanks to Riker's holodeck.
Right. Now you have to figure out a way to bring Trip back, but
they did it in the novels, so they can do it.
Okay, they did it in the novels. Okay, I haven't read one of those yet.
Oh yeah, yeah. The post series novels are pretty good. I've read a couple of them.
How cool. Okay, I'll have to get my hands on one of those. Okay, well, so that's what we'll be doing next episode, 434, Star Trek Explorer Shorts.
Sounds good.
Okay. Take it easy, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at First Name ST Comic, Second Name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.